Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Today's edition of Spiritual Awakening Radio is titled, There is No Vatican of the Spirit, a reflection on the impermanence of spiritual movements in a world of samsara, a world of changes. My name is James Bean. Welcome to Spiritual Awakening Radio. Spiritual Awakening Radio explores the world of spirituality, comparative religion, world scriptures, and other books, East and West, God, meditation, near-death experiences, the vegan diet, and ahimsa ethics, education for a more peaceful planet. There is only one time when it is essential to awaken. That time is now. From my mission statement, there's not just one religion, there are thousands. After years of being concerned that too few voices, too few points of view were getting heard when it comes to spiritual paths and world religions, that the radio airwaves were not reflecting the diversity that really exists, I started producing my own programs, exploring the world of spirituality, comparative religion, meditation, mysticism, and books, bringing to the airwaves the gentle voices of saints, the wisdom of masters or mystics, world scriptures, sacred texts, the great spiritual traditions and classics of the East and the West. Welcome to today's edition of Spiritual Awakening Radio. Today's program is titled, There is No Vatican of the Spirit, a reflection on the impermanence of spiritual movements in a world of samsara, in a world of changes, a world of change. Nothing stays the same. When I use the term Vatican here, I'm not really referring to Catholicism or the Vatican as such, but I'm using it as a kind of metaphor for institutions, or in other words, there is no institution of the spirit. There is no university of mysticism. World religions can fairly successfully pass on to the next generation their beliefs, their theological creed, if you will. We believe in A, B, C, and D. Or perhaps some tablets made of stone containing 10 commandments or ethical precepts. But states of consciousness cannot be passed on through documents. States of consciousness cannot be derived from scriptures or legal documents. What we gain from prayer and meditation comes from within, perhaps with some mentoring from without, from living teachers. When it comes to enlightenment, gnosis, or direct spiritual experience, that's something that living people do. And we learn from living teachers. Mystics learn from living mystics. A living candle that's lit, a living flame, can light other candles and pass on that light to others. It's not a matter of speculating what someone hundreds of years ago had for a spiritual practice. We can sit at the feet of a living teacher and learn our own lesson here and now in this generation, in our time, from a living one, and develop our own spiritual practice leading to our own direct inner experience, enlightenment, or gnosis. And that sort of relationship between master and disciple is very fragile. That knowledge can't be written down and communicated as a document. If there are no living mystics, mysticism disappears. The light goes out. And that's much more difficult than a creed or passing on some theological doctrines to a future generation. In order to have mysticism, you need living mystics. There needs to be mystical teachers and living students learning a spiritual practice. As a friend from Vancouver says, there is no Vatican of the Spirit. Someone I know from Vancouver coined that term, who specializes in writing about the politics of guru succession in India, suggesting that all spiritual movements decline and turn to dust sooner or later. It's just a matter of time. Try as they might, spirituality cannot be institutionalized. Groups usually undergo a process of gradual decline, dispensing with crucial principles or techniques every so often. Living in a world of forgetfulness, change, and spiritual slumber, how soon we forget. This decline is so gradual that sadly most in a spiritual movement over the decades of their short human lifespan don't even notice or would rather not be mindful of such matters. After looking back, years or many decades later, the lucky ones, not completely intoxicated by social status, power or position, or investment, might perhaps come to see the occasional wrong turn after wrong turn a spiritual group has made, all, of course, in the name of good intentions. Spirituality gets lost. Mysticism is the first to go, is the canary in the coal mine, is the first to be sacrificed. Painting a temple is easy. Gaining enlightenment requires going within, requires a certain amount of mentoring and direct experience. That's more difficult than painting a temple or building or passing on a book to a future generation. Wrong turn after wrong turn can be made, all in the name of peace, progress, and good intentions. Building bigger buildings with less meditating going on in the bigger, noisier buildings. Getting busier without, yet not getting as far within. An overall reduction in the percentage of the population having inner mystical experiences. All in the name of saving the world by proselytizing, by trolling for disciples in the West, marketing and advertising. Religious organizations are always out to grow, to proselytize, to make converts. Spiritual paths are like that. But there is a great danger in this process of proselytizing. If the focus is always about new people, then the focus is less on one's own growth. It's easy to lose oneself if the focus is always about growth and recruitment instead of spiritual growth and change. Life-changing, transformative inner experience, a close encounter of the God kind, is what the world really needs, not endless branding, photo ops, and marketing opportunities, marketing campaigns. It's easy to forget one's roots and get lost trolling for disciples in the West. But blessed are those who know where they came from and carry on the ancient wisdom. With any spiritual movement, sooner or later, we are eventually left with bones, statues, dust from the past, apostles and prophets that are no more, the shoes and spectacles of the guru who lived many decades ago, and on a few occasions, scrolls or scriptures that are worshipped as holy books, even though these very same holy books might instruct us to not worship books. Rather, these holy scriptures are advising us to be healed of our own blindness, to go within ourselves, to develop sight, see the divine light, and to be healed of our deafness, with ears open to hearing the inner music, the music of the spheres, the voice of the Creator. All of these great teachers of days gone by have generally reaffirmed for their generation the same basic truths and inner experiences. I really do like my friend's phrase, "there is no Vatican of the Spirit." I find that to be a useful way of putting it. Spiritual movements come and go. Schools of spirituality and mystics are replaced by polyester prophets parasitically interpreting or reinterpreting the past inspiration once breathed by others. Living saints are sometimes eventually replaced by CEOs of religious corporations riding around in very expensive rickshaws and are incapable, apparently, of composing their own scriptures, composing their own spiritual discourses, inspired poetry, banis, bhajans, or prose, like their predecessors. All of the organizations associated with mystic paths at present, rest assured, will meet the same fate as those of past generations, eventually being replaced with vibrant gatherings in diverse locations, new budding branches of the living, mystical tree of life to replace the old, same as always, thank God. In other words, there is a crisis and renewal process that is going on and has always been going on since the beginning of time. There is no Vatican of the Spirit. There is no Essene headquarters that people are connected with somewhere in the Judean desert. Groups come, groups go, migrate, bubble up here and there, in Egypt for a while, in Kabbalah, and in Persia, and in northern India, in Rajasthan, and then down in Agra for a while, and over in Delhi for a while, and up in Bihar district for a while. There is no one location where the school of mysticism has been operating, founded by Pythagoras sometime in ancient times. It doesn't work that way. Mystics gather around their master underneath the Bodhi tree in one location for a while, and then after that first initial phase of the living teacher and his living students, and a simple, direct, not-so-organized organization. After that phase, you have other phases of bishops and creeds and institutions and building buildings and making up new rules and regs and scriptures and that sort of thing. That's sort of the second and third phases, you know, that eventually develop up. And eventually the mystics are no more, but there'll be a living mystic path that will emerge someplace else. And so it goes on. Mysticism seems to move from group to group, from location to location. A famous saint from Hathras, India, by the name of Tulsi Sahib, used to sleep in the trunk of a tree at night. I read that somewhere. I find that to be absolutely charming, as it reveals that Tulsi Sahib did not live in a mansion of opulent decadency, no Porsches parked in the driveway, so to speak, or rickshaws at that time. You know, no super expensive cars in the driveway, or elephants, or some expensive gold-studded, ruby-studded rickshaw. An image that would have suggested a contradiction, you know, between the teacher's lifestyle and his teachings. It makes no sense for someone who is saying that the material plane is not all there is. Makes no sense for someone like that to live in a mansion with platinum faucets and lots of Porsches in the driveway. If I ever travel to Hathras, it will not be to visit the samad containing Tulsi's ashes, although that would, of course, be interesting, but to that tree where Tulsi Sahib once slept and meditated nearby. He spent much meditation, time in meditation near that tree. I think that's the place where I would want to go if I was in the neighborhood there in Hathras. There is no permanent institution or university of mysticism, but a decline renewal process. A continuous pattern of masters leaving older groups, movements, ashrams, or real estate, and emerging in new locations to begin again, to reboot, to reset, to renew the mystic path on planet Earth, to keep the torch of spirituality burning bright for another generation or two. I think all of these mystical paths only last for a few generations, and then the light goes out, but hopefully there was a successor somewhere who moves to some new location and begins the process again. That seems to be the pattern. That's the way I read history. Spirituality is the impulse of life from the great life, the universal soul or God that we as soul are intertwined with. So, no golden temples or idols made of wood and stone. The history of Essenes leaving Jerusalem, John the Baptist leaving Qumran, Thomas heading east, Valentinus and the Valentinian Gnostics moving out of Roman cities to create Egyptian spiritual communities in the desert near Nag Hammadi and other places near the Nile in Egypt. Tulsi Sahib moving from Pune to Hathras, and so it goes, and always has been, an observable pattern of breaking with the past, a time-honored tradition of crisis and renewal, reaffirming one's mystic path, making a fresh start in new locations, remaining free to exist in genuineness and authenticity without a hierarchy of scribes and an ever-growing caste of Pharisees taking over, surrounding the master, blocking him from our view. There never has been an institution of Gnosis. There is no Vatican of the Spirit. There is no University of Pythagoras or Essene Sangit somewhere in the Judean desert. Everything is constantly changing, moving from place to place. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end, said Seneca. Love that saying. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. Viva the revolution! So when the buildings get too big, things get so crowded, it's hard to meditate anymore. And there's less meditating going on in the new shiny buildings. And things get so busy that people don't focus within so much. And it becomes hard to meditate anyway. And mystical experience is on the decline. Less lights, less sound. A smaller, ever-growing smaller population of people having inner experiences. Whenever you find that sort of decay going on and frustration, the mystic soul says, I'm going to find a new place where I can meditate, a new cave, if you will, a new Bodhi tree to sit under. And so that mystic spirit says, I want to be free. I don't care if I have to resign as being bishop over here with all the perks, power, and prestige that go with that. I'm going to someplace nice, someplace quiet, where I can meditate. And others follow that person and say, yeah, you're right. Things are so busy and noisy, and I don't care about spending all of my money upkeeping this temple, spending all of my money polishing the temple, giving it a new coat of paint. Let's go someplace nice. Let's have a simplified path, free of politics, where we can focus on going within. And thus, the great move from Qumran to the desert, or from the desert to Jerusalem, and then from, and on it goes throughout history. I read history very much as being situations like this where a mystic movement goes kaput sooner or later, gets kind of corrupted and off course and taken over and conquered by emperors and politicians and political considerations, and the mystic souls organize again, go someplace new, reboot, reset, restart, and begin their simple mystic path once again over in Hothras or in some other location in the east or west. And so they really get back once again to that simplicity of Jesus gathered with some disciples in a small circle. Buddha sitting underneath the Bodhi tree with his group of disciples. Simple, direct, nothing fancy. Just genuine. After the break on this week's edition of Spiritual Awakening Radio, I want to begin sharing the rules for being guru. Stay tuned.
Save the planet and please your taste buds at the same time with Vegetarian House. You can't find a wider array of delicious international cuisine at an affordable price than the Vegetarian House restaurant in San Jose, California. Its wide array of organic vegan food even includes raw dishes, egg-free desserts, and non-alcoholic cocktails. As more and more people around the world adopt a plant-based diet, Vegetarian House shows how compassionate food choices can be a delicious way to promote peace and a sustainable planet. For more information, go to www.vegetarianhouse.us. Once again, the web address is www.vegetarianhouse.us.
Be vegan, make peace, be good to the planet, and please your palate at the same time. Peace begins on our plate. If you want to please your taste buds while promoting love and harmony with the earth, look for the opening of a Loving Hut restaurant near you. Loving Hut is a new chain of animal-free gourmet restaurants all over the U.S. and around the world. Loving Hut provides a practical starting point for those wishing to make the noble transition to a plant-based diet. Currently the fastest-growing vegan fast food chain on the planet, Loving Hut opened its first branch in Milpitas, California, in July of 2008. To see what's on the menu at the Loving Hut near you, go to this website, lovinghut.us. Once again, the web address is lovinghut.us.
Vistaprint. I'm sure you've heard the name. Over 17 million small businesses and consumers have used Vistaprint for printed products, ranging from business cards and brochures to invitations and thank you cards. Why? Because Vistaprint has the lowest price guarantee, and you can design your products with templates or upload your design. And they have free products. 3-day rush service and satisfaction is always guaranteed. Try Vistaprint. Just go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Vistaprint logo.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
This week's edition of Spiritual Awakening Radio is titled, There is No Vatican of the Spirit, a reflection on the impermanence of spiritual movements in a world of samsara, in a world of changes and illusion. In Eastern religions, a living teacher will appoint a spiritual successor. That successor, in turn, appoints other successors. and thus is born a guru lineage, a kind of apostolic succession of teachers, perhaps based at a certain ashram or several different ashrams. And this is how Eastern religions, Buddhism, Jainism, and Hinduism, carry on into the future from generation to generation. This is how they communicate their teachings. The Dalai Lama is a perfect example of this. Before the present Dalai Lama was another Dalai Lama, and before him was another 13th Dalai Lama, 12th Dalai Lama, you know, and so on. 11th Dalai Lama, 10th Dalai Lama, and so on. And when you have a living teacher that appoints a successor, that's a form of accreditation, certification, if you will. That's one way Eastern religions try and manage to keep pure their teachings, their form of spiritual practice, you know, as opposed to someone who says, I feel like I'm the guru now. I'm going to go out and print up some business cards and hang up some posters. I think I'm the guru now. It really doesn't work that way. It's really the case of the most advanced of disciples getting appointed by a living teacher and receiving their blessings, their endorsement. And in the case of the Dalai Lama, the teacher reincarnates again and again and again. And that takes me to this story of Darya Sahib, which I will also share again during the History of Mysticism series that I'm doing via Spiritual Awakening Radio soon. Darya Sahib of Bihar was a great spiritual teacher who lived from 1674 to 1780. Many believe that Darya Sahib was the reincarnation of Guru Kabir. In any case, it can be said that the teachings of Darya and his spiritual successors, the gurus he appointed to carry on after him, do indeed represent a continued living mystic expression of the spiritual path that Kabir brought a few generations earlier. Says Darya Sahib, saint of Bihar, Sat Purush, the living supreme lord, and his own son serves as the ladder, the connection. That ladder is continued through me, says Darya. Fakir Das, Basti Das, and Guna Das are the ladders proceeding from me. They're his spiritual successors. He says, whomsoever they appoint as their successors would also be known as ladders. Thus will my line of succession continue. Those souls who remain affiliated with these successors shall cross the ocean of samsara, the ocean of this world of illusion. How long will this spiritual path last in the world? How long will this line of succession continue? Kindly relate it to us in your own words, asks Fakir Das. Listen mindfully, O Fakir Das. I explain this to you, says Darya Sahib. As long as the discipline of the sound current is preserved, unadulterated, inner sound meditation, the yoga of the sound current, the line of succession will truly continue. But when it is mixed with outer rituals and display of external garbs, my sound current will part company. My divine essence will depart, and the souls will go into the mouth of Kal, the mouth of illusion. Kal refers to false beliefs of the mind. I shall then come to this world again, says Darya. I shall proclaim the teaching of the sound current again. Proclaiming the teaching, I shall found the line of succession once more. And emancipating the souls, I shall take them to my abode. For eons I have been coming to this world and imparting the teaching of the sound current, says Saint Darya Sahib of Bihar district in India. What a fascinating passage that gives us a glimpse into a very different side of transmission of knowledge from generation to generation, from the point of view of the reincarnating guru, from the point of view of the teacher. Not just from the history books that describe this went on and that went on and people followed this teacher for a while or something like that, but from the vantage point of the teacher. Rites and rituals are easy to transmit from generation to generation. It's easy to write a holy book or some ethical precepts, theological beliefs. We believe in A, B, C, D, and E. It's easy to transmit that, but when it comes to consciousness, when it comes to meditation, in enlightenment or gnosis through meditation, a different state of consciousness being awoken in the disciple, this sort of thing cannot be passed on through legal documents or through reading and speculating about scriptures. It is a direct disciple-master relationship that is cultivated, leading to one's own daily meditation practice. And this very much is easy to fall by the wayside without guidance, without a teacher, without others to meditate with, without a living mystic. It's hard to have living students who are mystics. You know, this knowledge just disappears and dries up and people have become unaware of the possibilities, as it were. Rites and rituals are easy to communicate. Bow in a certain direction, paint this temple a certain color. You know, everybody gets that. It's so easy to do. But a state of consciousness requires something very different. And here we have a teacher that says when his spiritual path falls into disrepair, when people stop meditating, he actually plans on reincarnating again and initiating souls and mentoring them. The most advanced disciples he will appoint again to be his spiritual successors, and that's how he plans on rebooting his spiritual path in the world, to keep it going for a few more generations before having to come back again. I really will get to the rules for being guru after this next break. You're hearing Spiritual Awakening Radio on HealthyLife.net. I'm James Bean. My email address is james@spiritualawakeningradio.com. Stay tuned.
Save the planet and please your taste buds at the same time with Vegetarian House. You can't find a wider array of delicious international cuisine at an affordable price than the Vegetarian House restaurant in San Jose, California. Its wide array of organic vegan food even includes raw dishes, egg-free desserts, and non-alcoholic cocktails. As more and more people around the world adopt a plant-based diet, Vegetarian House shows how compassionate food choices can be a delicious way to promote peace and a sustainable planet. For more information, go to www.vegetarianhouse.us. Once again, the web address is www.vegetarianhouse.us.
There's a reason why ADT is America's leading home security company. Since 1874, they've helped protect over 5 million homes. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the ADT banner. It's more affordable than you think.
Be vegan, make peace, be good to the planet, and please your palate at the same time. Peace begins on our plate. If you want to please your taste buds while promoting love and harmony with the earth, look for the opening of a Loving Hut restaurant near you. Loving Hut is a new chain of animal-free gourmet restaurants all over the U.S. and around the world. Loving Hut provides a practical starting point for those wishing to make the noble transition to a plant-based diet. Currently the fastest-growing vegan fast food chain on the planet, Loving Hut opened its first branch in Milpitas, California, in July of 2008. To see what's on the menu at the Loving Hut near you, go to this website, lovinghut.us. Once again, the web address is lovinghut.us.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Yeah.
Today's program is titled, There Is No Vatican of the Spirit, a reflection on the impermanence of spiritual movements in a world of samsara, a world of changes and illusion. This is based on an article which was published in a couple of different magazines. I can send you a copy of this article if you want to email me. Free of charge, I can send this to you via email. My address is james@spiritualawakeningradio.com. Also, if you have any questions or comments, use that same address, james@spiritualawakeningradio.com. Visit my website, spiritualawakeningradio.com, where you'll have access to articles, links to social networking sites, Spiritual Awakening Radio at Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, and so on. Blogs, lots there at spiritualawakeningradio.com, including links to podcasts. Rules for being guru. Much is asked of the disciple, and that is the general focus, but a rare glimpse of what's required of the guru can be found in a brand new chapter I'm helping to actually proofread and edit. It's from Swami Vyasanand Ji Maharaj's new book, The Inward Journey of the Soul, from a chapter called The Mantra of an Accomplished Teacher. This contains rules for being guru. We've heard many rules for being disciple, but what about the guru? This unique chapter, for the first time in the English language, provides a glimpse into being a good guru and some of the principles that goes into that. And this is the kind of rare depth I would find and anticipate finding in a book by Swami Vyasanand Ji Maharaj. Being authentic, rules for being guru, an accomplished, qualified teacher. He says, many ordinary gurus may be found roaming around in cities and villages, and a mantra can be easily obtained from them. However, these gurus often do not require their students to make lifestyle transformations, nor do they require them to observe strict moral conduct or spend much time in meditation. They sometimes make unrealistic claims that getting such a mantra will result in enlightenment in 3 days. In Mahatma Gandhi's words, quote, an unqualified teacher of material sciences may not be so detrimental to the success of a student. However, if the spiritual guru is not qualified, then the student cannot achieve the goal nor have success. In other words, with the spiritual guru, you know, if he's not so good, then that's a real negative influence in our lives. In the words of Maharishi Mehi, through satsang, find a true guru, a true mentor, a true spiritual guide. Without the knowledge attained from a true guru, the path is very difficult to tread. Thus, many saints have emphasized the importance of choosing wisely an accomplished teacher. Swami Vyasanand, in these dark times, it is very difficult to differentiate between a truly accomplished guru and a false teacher. I'm just going to pause there and say, you know, we see literature from hundreds or thousands of different spiritual paths, and, you know, they all have glossy literature, smiling faces, thumbs up, things are cool, things are rocking, things are doing great. And for the new person who's just been on a spiritual quest for like 3 weeks or a month, it's really just about impossible to tell who's who and what the history and background of all of these groups are, the good, the bad, the ugly, the profound, the mundane, the advanced, the corrupt, the scandal, and the scandal-free. You know, it's hard to know who's who and what's going on, you know, when you're new, a newbie, a new spiritual seeker on the path, you know. It's hard to really figure this out. So it's good to take some time to sort things out and not rush into anything, you know. Back to Swami Vyasanand. For most people unfamiliar with spiritual paths, such discernment is challenging. One reason for this difficulty is that it is critical to spend time around a guru to ascertain his worthiness. Those who are able to easily recognize an accomplished guru are rare. The question then is how to recognize an accomplished guru and one who is not so accomplished, or worse, one who is corrupt. The difficulty that most being mesmerized by worldly attractions judge gurus by outward and material achievements, which are wholly an inaccurate measure. The true gurus live a simple life and morally upright lifestyle. They stay away from pomp and show of the display of power. For example, they do not have expensive cars and opulent ashrams. They do not show favoritism among their disciples or followers. They do not have, like, rich, they don't live in opulent mansions and super expensive cars. Rickshaws of the rich and famous, if you will. Swami Vyasanand. They do not care about their appearance or try to impress others through their outer appearance, unquote. And yeah, I certainly see this every day. It's easy for people to, and this is partly why I do my radio program and have written blogs and articles, published articles over the years. It's very easy to find the top 20 or 30 most popular spiritual gurus in the world. I mean, they've got millions of dollars. They are very visible. They're very well published and highly visible. And so anyone interested in Eastern religions are going to bump right into them in 5 minutes of looking through any bookstore shelves, right? So that's one reason why I do this program, is to say, hey, here's an out-of-print book from 1926 that's good, based on the merits rather than the marketing presence in the marketplace of ideas, so that it's not always a given that everyone's going to always gravitate toward the same 10 or 20 big names, you know, because there's a lot of other people who also live in India and Thailand and China and so on, you know. Today's inept gurus do not pay attention to the tradition of the saints and are simply intent on increasing the number of their followers, says Vyasanand. They are not judicious regarding disciples and are not selective in imparting their teachings. This all goes against the ancient Vedic tradition of teaching. One who has not treaded the path, how can he impart its knowledge to others? And that's from Swami Vyasanand's Rules for Being Guru. We'll pick up on this after the break. You're hearing Spiritual Awakening Radio on HealthyLife.net. Positive Talk Radio. Stay tuned for more after these messages.
Loving Hut is the fastest growing chain of animal-free gourmet vegan restaurants all over the world. Loving Hut provides a practical starting point for those wishing to make the noble transition to a healthy, sustainable, planet-friendly, plant-based diet. All mouth-watering items on the menu are 100% vegan. In the Atlanta area, visit Loving Hut at 6385 Spalding Drive, Norcross, Georgia. To see what's on the menu, get driving directions or other information, go to lovinghut.us/Georgia. lovinghut.us/Georgia. And at Facebook, the address is facebook.com/lovinghutGA. That's facebook.com/lovinghutGA.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Spiritual Awakening Radio. There is no Vatican of the Spirit, no institution of mysticism, no ancient university founded by Pythagoras and the rishis who authored the Upanishads that's still with us. There is no Vatican of the Spirit, a reflection on the impermanence of spiritual movements in a world of changes, a world of samsara and illusion or maya. Things keep changing. The history of mysticism on planet Earth is more like a tree with many branches. We can be grateful that that tree is alive, and new branches keep on getting formed, because a dead tree is one that does not have new branches being formed. So we are grateful that the tree of mysticism, the tree of life, is still with us and growing and branching out. Things branch out and move from place to place, and that's very logical and as it should be. For the mystic seeker, there is no longitude or latitude of the spirit. There is no north, south, east, and west. We don't need to get attached to a certain city or patch of dirt or real estate or temple. That's not really the focus. The focus is within. So the location of that temple or ashram may change. We may be hanging out in the desert of Judea for a while, and then eventually end up in Egypt, and then in Persia, and then might head east to India for a while. And the mystic path comes and goes, surfaces here and there throughout history, moves around from place to place. The light is bright in Hathras for a while, and then the light gets bright someplace else for a while, and a few more generations of meditators carry on in some place, and then as that light dims in one location, a brighter light appears elsewhere, and we can be grateful for this process. We can be grateful. It's not always easy to tell who an advanced enlightened teacher might be, as I read from the rules for being guru in the earlier segment. Sometimes you have to live with the teacher for a while and see how they really behave over time. See if they have any meltdowns or not, if they're always genuine and true, and get up early in the morning and meditate, even when nobody is looking and no press is around to take photos. Just the truth, just the reality, genuine and true, when no one is looking, no PR opportunity part of it. Well, one major obstacle that human beings have to deal with when they're exploring spiritual paths is claims of exclusivity. We got the truth. We can't help it if we're the one and only true chosen of God and have the truth in these latter days, or this Dharma ending age, or these last days, or this era. Gotta watch out for the exclusivity claims. The one true master, the one true satsang, the one true sangit, the one true sangha. Gotta watch out for claims of exclusivity. Because if people believe that they belong to the one and only avenue to divine truth in the world, that's going to make them very susceptible to being controlled or tolerating a lot of abuse, right? You don't want to lose your connection to the one and only avenue to divine truth in the world, right? But if a greater reality sets in, and I keep saying thank God for the internet, when people become more aware of the reality that each and every yoga, each and every spiritual path available has many sisters and cousins and brothers and other gurus and parallel paths and other ashrams teaching the same thing. Once you realize you're living in a world where there's not just one teacher, one representative of one school of spirituality, but each and every yoga, each and every discipline, each and every form of meditation, each and every school of mysticism has various branches. Once you start to explore that and realize that maybe some of those other branches are good too, then you are no longer susceptible to being manipulated and controlled and have to put up with any abuse in one particular place, because you have learned a higher truth and that truth has set you free. No longer do you have to say, well, this is the one and only true path in the world, so, you know, anything I need to rationalize, I will happily rationalize. You don't need to do that anymore. I like the spirit of open-mindedness and inquisitiveness we find at the site of the discovery of the Nag Hammadi Library, the Gnostic scriptures of Egypt, for instance. Here you have, during the 4th century AD, a group of Pacomian monks. They had a library, and in their library were holy books of not just their own Orthodox Christianity, but also scriptures and spiritual discourses from Valentinian Gnostics, Sethian Gnostics, Pythagoreans, Egyptian Hermetic schools of Hermes Trismegistus, various religions, some Zoroastrian influenced texts from further to the east, some references to India are in the Nag Hammadi scriptures. Some believe that Buddhists actually were present in Alexandria at one point in time. So you have an interesting group of people curious about other religions. Now, many of the writings that they were into were of the same basic path that they were on. So for them, it was not a change in subject. It was other versions of the same path that they were studying. Other versions of the same, you know, kind of cousin Gnostic mystical religions around the Mediterranean that they were curious about, and Mesopotamia too. So they were not just eclectic students of anything, an anything goes school of spirituality. They were looking at other teachers that were very close to what they were following for a spiritual practice and orientation. And I think there's a great lesson there that we can practice in this age to do the same thing, to be a little curious and use Google and Bing and check out similar masters and teachers. And who knows, you might find a couple of them that you really like a lot. And then you're no longer boxed in to a world of the one and only true guru, the one and only spiritual path, which, in addition to not being true, has a sort of oppressive quality to it that is worth avoiding or transcending. There is no Vatican of the spirit. For a spiritual awakening, I'm James Bean. Thanks for listening.
Save the planet and please your taste buds at the same time with Vegetarian House. You can't find a wider array of delicious international cuisine at an affordable price than the Vegetarian House restaurant in San Jose, California. Its wide array of organic vegan food even includes raw dishes, egg-free desserts, and non-alcoholic cocktails. As more and more people around the world adopt a plant-based diet, Vegetarian House shows how compassionate food choices can be a delicious way to promote peace and a sustainable planet. For more information, go to www.vegetarianhouse.us. Once again, the web address is www.vegetarianhouse.us. Good to the planet and please your palate at the same time. Peace begins on your plate. If you want to please your palate while still promoting love and harmony with the planet, look for the opening of a Loving Hut restaurant near you. Loving Hut is a new chain of animal-free gourmet restaurants around the world. Loving Hut provides a practical starting point for those wishing to make the noble transition to a plant-based diet. Currently the fastest-growing vegan fast food chain in the world, Loving Hut opened its first branch in Milpitas, California, in July of 2008. To learn more, go to www.lovinghut.us. Once again, the address is www.lovinghut.us.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Spiritual Awakening Radio is heard every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, which is noon Pacific Time. Also on Sundays at noon Eastern, which is 9 a.m. Pacific Time. At HealthyLife.net, click on the Archive tab, scroll down, and you'll discover that there are many editions of Spiritual Awakening Radio there that you can click on and listen to anytime on demand. There are also podcasts of the program available through HealthyLife.net. Visit my website, SpiritualAwakeningRadio.com. From there, you can send me an email if you like.
And at Facebook, the address is facebook.com/Spiritual Awakening Radio, where you'll find links to recently archived programs, spiritual quotes, and news about upcoming shows. For Spiritual Awakening, I'm James Bean.